Mathematical Proof for Marriage by Bite Nom Nom. Read by Alice Knox. Math Notes. Relation R on E is called a partial ordering if it is reflexive, antisymmetric, and transitive. In this case, ER is called a partial ordered set, or poset. A poset ER is called a well or totally ordered set, or a chain, if and only if either X is less than or equal to Y, or Y is less than or equal to X, for any XY elements of E. A poset P less than or equal is called an upper semilattice, if and only if a least upper bound for X and Y exist for any XY elements of P. A poset P less than or equal is called a lower semilattice if and only if a greatest lower bound for X and Y exist for any XY elements of P. A poset P less than or equal is called a lattice if and only if it is both an upper semilattice and a lower semilattice. Wang et al., 2010, Nonlinear Integrals and Their Applications in Data Mining. Translation. A relation on a set is called a partial ordering if it is reflexive. For instance, A is less than or equal to A. Antisymmetric. For instance, if A is less than or equal to B and B is less than or equal to A, then A equals B. And transitive. For instance, if A is less than or equal to B and B is less than or equal to C, then A is less than or equal to C. The set ER of the set and the relation is called a poset. If any two points in the set can be compared, then the poset is totally ordered. If you can find an upper bound between any two points and a lower bound between any two points in a poset, the poset is known as a lattice. Sherlock's mind had always been a lattice, in the mathematical sense, of course, not the gardening sense. He ordered things inside his mind constantly, everything, always. Pick out any two, and he could always tell you which was more important, more valuable to him than the other. On the bottom were idiots. The ignorant, Anderson. At the top, of course, was the work. It was always the work, ever since he became a consulting detective. Before that, even, he had work then, too, even if he lacked his current title. The appearance of one John Watson, however, almost made a mere semi-lattice of Sherlock's mind, because suddenly there were two things, that settled into a top spot. Sherlock had assumed he would choose the work first, always, but then there was the interesting case he put off because John was ill. In the end, Lestrade solved it without his help before John recovered. Not that John knew Sherlock had turned down the case simply to remain at 221B and watch over him. No. As far as John knew, Sherlock was only home that day because he was doing an important experiment about exposure to heat on the liver Molly had given him for his birthday the week before, or what was left of it anyway. As far as John knew, Sherlock only kept coming and going from John's room because Sherlock was rather rudely using John's pants for some mysterious unspoken-of component in the experiment. "Are you taking my temperature?" John had asked at one point, his voice thick with sleep and mucus. "I'm testing the thermometer I'm using," Sherlock explained. He removed John's own thermometer from beneath John's tongue. "I know this one you've been using to take your temperature is correct after testing it on myself as well earlier. If the reading's on the low end of this one," he held up the higher temperature thermometer for theoretical use in the heat exposure experiment, "match up, I can be reasonably more confident in its accuracy. I'm using your temperature since it's higher. This one only goes down to 40. Which was rubbish, but John was clearly too dazed and delirious from troubled sleep and cough medicine to notice, because he nodded and opened his mouth for Sherlock to test the other thermometer. "I hope my temperature isn't 40," he mumbled. "It's not," Sherlock said, "but it's closer to 40 than mine is." "Yeah, well, you cold-blooded," John muttered, and Sherlock could not suppress a smile. John didn't know Sherlock was checking his temperature every hour for reasons other than something nonsensical about his experiment. John didn't know that Sherlock had muted his mobile and brought it downstairs so that John wouldn't be distressed or kept awake by his girlfriend's endless text messages. John didn't know that Sherlock had really rather wanted to play Schön Rosmarin on his violin in the sitting room when he had instead done a handful of pleasant little serenades by John's window that night under the pretense of needing to keep an eye on the new neighbor's evening habits. It wasn't a case. But all the data Sherlock gathered while he watched over John was useful data. The hours and days John was sick were not wasted with hand-wringing over John's health. Work was still done. John simply didn't know it had been arranged to accommodate Sherlock's desire to hover about and make sure John wasn't dying. John also didn't know that he had almost made Sherlock's mind a semi-lattice, and so he certainly didn't know of the solution Sherlock had reached. Because it seemed that the work, of course, the work, was at least of equal value to John. And it seemed that John was at least of equal value to the work. It was a conundrum. It was stressful. It sent Sherlock's mind scrambling for a period of time, comparing and weighing and deciding. And it was impossible. But then, the solution came to him. If the ranking system in Sherlock's mind was a lattice, it was a poset. And if the ranking system in Sherlock's mind was a poset, it was antisymmetric. And if the ranking system in Sherlock's mind was antisymmetric, and John was worth at least as much as the work, and the work was worth at least as much as John, then there was no other conclusion than that the two were equivalent. And Sherlock, of course, was married to his work. End, A Mathematical Proof for Marriage. The original work can be found at Archive of Our Own. User, Bite Nom Nom. Or you can reach me at aliceknox.dreamwith.org. The music used in this podfic can be found at opengoldbergvariations.org.